This is the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast. It's September 4th, and I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Well, welcome back, everybody. It is officially September. It sort of marks the turning point of when summer's over and we head into the fall. It's also the turning point where we head into the very busy season. And certainly in the energy business, there is no shortage of busyness. There's been a lot that's gone on over the course of the summer. But before we really dive into it and some of the pressing issues, how was your vacation?
Short.
Yeah, me too.
the news never stopped this summer. There's a lot of issues but it was nice to have some time off. I did miss doing the podcast, and I hope you listeners missed hearing it. So we're happy to be back.
Yeah, we are happy to be recording. Yeah, no, I had a good summer too, but it's good to be back. And as we said, there's no shortage of issues, and one of the most pressing issues is the Enbridge mainline issue. And for those of you who don't know, we have a big change in one of the main arteries that leads our oil exports, 70% of the oil exports out of our country. And the pipeline company Enbridge is looking to make those changes. So Jackie, why don't you tell us a little bit about the changes and what it means, and let's have a discussion.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I want to start with some context. You know, today actually we learned that another pipeline, the TMX, has been slowed potentially because the court is hearing some appeals to the decision when the federal government approved it for the second time.
The infamous Trans Mountain.
Yeah. And, you know, I bring this up because the Enbridge mainline changing their commercial terms now, we just have to keep it in context. This is a world where we're woefully short, chronically short pipeline capacity. There isn't certainty when and if we'll get these other pipelines.
Like Trans Mountain.
I actually believe that we will eventually get Trans Mountain. We now have the patient capital of the government, and there's a process here. I don't know when it will actually happen. It could be delayed, but eventually I do think we'll get that pipeline. But this is the reality we live in, is that we depend on the Enbridge mainline for 70% of all the capacity leaving Western Canada, and it is uncertain when and how much other pipe capacity will ever come.
Okay, so give us a geography lesson. Like Trans Mountain goes from basically Edmonton to Burnaby. It's been around for over half a century. The Enbridge mainline goes from where?
The Enbridge mainline is an existing pipe that starts in Western Canada and ends in the U.S. Midwest. But it's many different lines, and they kind of branch out from there. So you can get through the Enbridge mainline to Ontario, to refineries in Quebec. And there is some capacity to get barrels even further downstream,
but like beyond the Midwest. Dominantly, it goes to the U.S. Midwest, the big refining complex.
So the vast majority goes to the kind of Midwest area. It is the only source of supply for those refineries, especially now that another pipeline called Capline is being reversed, but it's basically a single source of supply for many refineries.
Okay, so this is like the main artery. 70% of Western Canada's oil production goes through this artery that's been around for decades.
It's 70 years old. In fact, the initial legislation in Canada about how pipelines should be operated and how they should be open for all producers was made because of the birth of this pipeline back in 1949. And so it's been around for a long time. It's operated as what they call a common carrier, where 100% of the capacity was available for anybody. Every month, people nominate, you know, how much oil they want to send down that pipeline, and everyone gets an opportunity to ship.
You have to reserve your space on the pipeline, whether you're a large company with tens of thousands, 100,000 barrels, all the way down to the smallest company. Everybody has equal access to this artery that goes from Western Canada to some of the biggest refineries in the North America, in the world. And so it's a vital artery. As you said, this term common carrier means, as I said, equal access, but now that's about to change.
Well, and I think it's important, I just want to clarify one thing, equal access. Actually, today, there are issues with that already. For example, you often hear that the pipeline has got more people wanting to send barrels down it than there is because, you know, we're short pipeline capacity.
Right.
So each month, about 40% more barrels are asked by producers and refiners to send down it than it really can send. And that has caused some problems. And so it's been well documented in a report published by the NEB called Optimizing Oil Pipeline and Rail Capacity to Western Canada, that not everyone's getting equal access to this capacity. That is one of the issues. They basically said in their report that companies with refining and storage are getting a bigger share. So, but in theory, that's how it's supposed to work, and that's the intention.
Right. And so issues have started to crop up over the last few years because pipelines like the Trans Mountain, Energy East, Gateway, Keystone XL have not come to fruition. Production has grown. We've got high blood pressure. We've got to choke it back through this mainline artery. And so not everybody gets cut back equally.
Right. And it's also caused issues with depressed spot prices. So at the end of 2018, we don't need to revisit that, but you remember how wide those discounts were. And the NEB report found that the rules associated with divvying up the capacity on this line were in part contributing to those wide differentials.
So NEB, National Energy Board, that was the agency previous to what we now have as the Canadian Energy Regulator. So the National Energy Board has oversight in terms of the rules and regulations around this pipeline because it crosses many provincial boundaries and it crosses the U.S.-Canada boundary.
That's right. And they regulate at any interprovincial pipelines as well as export pipelines. And they wrote this document that was basically a response to some of the concerns that were raised at the end of 2018 when we saw those big discounts. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to note that, you know, in theory, it's supposed to be open to everybody, but the way they divvy up the space has some problems. It was acknowledged by the regulator. And in fact, our natural resources minister federally, Minister Sohi, wrote a letter saying that there should be some investigation of how we can improve these. Now, that was back in March, and we haven't heard much about it since. But there is, you know, not everything's perfect with the system, but it is a very important artery that moves, you know, the vast majority of our crude.
Right. Okay. So it's pressured up. It's at full capacity, moving all this crude oil. Some issues in terms of now who gets access. It's not everybody has access because there's no spare capacity. But now we have a situation that's emerging where the rules of the game are potentially going to change as to who can get on this pipeline.
That's right. So Enbridge has proposed totally different commercial terms. So after 70 years of operating successfully with this 100% spot capacity, they have started an open season that began this summer.
Okay, let's time out for a minute. So let's define a couple of things for our audience. We have spot market. So that means you can get your barrels on without having to have some long-term contract, right?
That's right. Spot, when I say that, it means there's nobody that owns the pipeline. Every month, people can nominate how many barrels they would like to put into that capacity. And if there's too many barrels, they'll get cut back. But it's really open space that is owned by no one. And every month gets allocated.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm the jargon police here.
Yes. So there'll be a lot of that.
Okay. So define for our audience open season.
Open season is typically held by pipeline companies when they want to have a new commercial offering. Generally, it's related to new capacity or for pipes that are, you know, growing or adding new markets.
It's like an auction, right?
Yeah. And they basically say, hey, here's the terms of the deal. We want people to sign up. You know, sign binding contracts for 10 or 20 years to these terms. And then generally they go to the regulator and they say, hey, we want to do this. We have a lot of companies that support this. And then they get the regulator to approve the deal.
So it's not really an auction. It's more of an offering to companies saying that you can have so many thousand barrels a day.
Yeah, you can own this capacity.
You will have a guaranteed space on this pipeline for X number of years. We're offering it to you and we guarantee it for you.
That's right. And but to do that, you need to sign up to paying us for 10 to 20 years every day for that capacity. And so what they've done is they're proposing to take this pipeline that's 100% spot available to anyone and make 90% of it owned by people that sign these contracts. For as long as 10 to 20 years, it will be owned by these companies. No longer can anyone bid for that space. You know, the people that paid for that right will own it.
Right. So what we have potentially emerging is a situation where only a fraction of the companies in the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin will be able to get onto this pipeline on a spot basis because it will be completely contracted out for many, many years and locked up effectively.
Yeah, locked up. And you know, in a world where we're short pipeline capacity, I remind you, we just had the TMX news today. There's no certainty when we're going to get out of the bind we're in. In a world where we're short pipeline capacity, the people that own the pipe have a lot of negotiating power and leverage over everybody else. And, you know, you can see that in the gas markets and other examples as well. But, you know, the reality is, you know, our scarce commodity, it's not oil.
But it's not just, let me challenge you just for a second, because it's not only the pipeline capacity, the pipeline guys, Enbridge, that have an interest in seeing this pipe fully contracted out. I mean, there's the refiners in the Midwest of the U.S. that would love to have certainty of supply for the next 10 years and see it all locked down.
Well, I do think that the refiners will be supportive of this type of a proposal.
It has some supportive advantages. Or actually pushing for it?
You know, it's interesting. We'll get into this comment period that's just opened up, but we're going to find out in the next few days who is really supportive of this, because the National Energy Board, which has now been renamed to Canada Energy Regulator, that's confusing, by the way. Don't call it Canadian Energy Regulator. They've renamed the act to the Canadian Energy Act, but the regulator is called Canada Energy Regulator.
Yeah.
So that's the new group.
I'll just call it CER.
Yes,
NEBCER. Okay.
So they've actually, there's been a lot of concerns raised by Western Canadian producers. In fact, producers that represent about half of all of our Western Canadian production have written to the NEB and said, hey, we have some major concerns with this offering, this open season, you know, the terms and conditions. We want the NEB to rule on this before we are forced into signing these binding contracts. And so what the Canadian Energy Regulator has said, this is all breaking news over the last week, is we're going to have an expedited process to understand others' perspectives on this. And so it'll be interesting over the next few days, we'll understand more if the U.S. refiners are supportive of this idea. But I would think that they would be, because it, as you say, it gives them certainty of tolls. It gives them more certainty of supply potentially coming their way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, whether it's refiners or other big, I'll call them big interests, and I think you may be euphemizing the term supporter. I mean, I think a lot of these big companies are pushing for it. And you know what this reminds me of, Jackie, is metaphorically, is the issue down in the U.S. of internet, what they called net neutrality. And, you know, they had that debate a couple of years ago where, you know, how the internet is supposed to be equal access for all, whether you're a small company wanting to get your information onto the pipes, the fiber optics, et cetera, or whether you're Amazon and Netflix and the big guys, you know, the big guys wanted to get firm, effectively contracts at favorable prices to lock down some of the bandwidth on these big information pipes. But that violates this whole concept of net neutrality, where there's equal access for all. And they had the big debate, of course. And I think that this is very analogous over here. You know, we, I think, need to maintain what I would call pipe neutrality. In other words, that open access for whether you're little guy or very, very big guy. We cannot allow market power to alter the market dynamics that are already fairly fragile in our basin. I'll just say one more thing, and that is that the difference between net neutrality and pipe neutrality is, in the internet world, they are able to increase the capacity of their quote pipes, you know, their fiber optics and so on. Whereas we here in Western Canada, as you pointed out with the TMX and Keystone XL and Energies and so on, we are pipe constrained.
Right. And there's no certainty that we do get additional pipes. So we have to think about any of these proposals that are coming forward. We can't just hope that we'll get more pipe capacity and it won't be a problem. We have to assume that we won't and make sure that whatever we're doing will work in that scenario. And, you know, so what's being proposed is, you know, real concerns, and the companies that raise these concerns include just a range of companies, right? We have large integrated producers like Suncor and refiners like Shell, and smaller producers like MEG and the EPAC group, which actually is, you know, the small producer association in Western Canada and represents 500,000 barrels a day of production collectively, that group. So we have everything from, CNRL, the largest upstream-only producer in Canada by a long shot. So we've got everybody, whether you're big, you're small, you're integrated, you're not, there are concerns about this proposal.
So you're rattling off a list of Canadian producers. Right. And obviously, they are starting to wake up to realize that this could be a what I call market altering event. In other words, you're changing the rules of how the market operates. And by constraining 90% of the pipe and contracting out long term, I would hope that they would be concerned in terms of where this could end up and how it could affect prices.
Yeah. And, you know, I think an additional issue is, you know, if you look at the historic shippers on the pipeline, and this was well explained in, by the way, all these letters are available on the regulator site, so you can look at each of these companies' concerns. But in the CNRL letter, it was explained quite clearly that historically, because of operational issues and just like it's easier for the refiners to own the shipping rights. So they are actually the shippers. Something like 70 to 80% of all the crude oil that goes down the pipeline is effectively kind of contracted as by the refiners.
Right.
So imagine if this pipeline is mostly owned by the U.S. refiners.
Yeah.
A major piece of Canadian infrastructure could be owned for 10 to 20 years by refiners. In a world where we're short capacity, that does have implications for price.
Yeah, it sure does. But I, you know, let me take the counter side for a minute, too, because this is all part of, as I called it, big companies with a lot of market power. And you know, that's not necessarily all bad because big companies tend to drive efficiencies. You know, I also call it big boxification. You know, the big box stores, they come in and they put a lot of independents out of business, and that's not very good for the independents. But for the consumer, what it does is introduces efficiencies and lower costs and so on. So I, you know, I presume that the large company, whether it's pipe, refiner, or even producer, their view is we're just making things more efficient. So what do you do to that? What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I would just say that when it comes to producers in Western Canada, the largest producers, CNRL and Suncor, are against this change. So, you know, I think that—
But Suncor is really arguing on tolls. It's not necessarily argue on the premise of—
Well, actually, they are arguing on the premise that Enbridge is exerting its market power. Because at this point, there are very little options. We are short pipeline capacity, and they feel forced into participating in this deal, even though they fundamentally oppose it. So tolls is one of the reasons they oppose it, but they also think this is a time where Enbridge is trying to force these terms through that wouldn't be acceptable any other time.
Yeah.
Because there are no options, people are forced into accepting them.
Well, Jackie, you know, it sounds like we're sort of villainizing, say, Enbridge in particular, the big continental pipeline company, the largest in North America. But you know, I think they're just behaving much as one would expect them to in a free market capitalist context.
Well, yeah. I mean, they own this asset, right?
They've
invested billions of dollars of capital in this asset. And they're looking at, well, how can we get a maximum return from owning this asset? And, you know, there are concerns with if we get all these new pipelines built, that maybe their pipeline would be running a little bit less than it is today. Now, there is a captive refining audience there that I think will keep them in line, you know, highly utilized. But the flows will be lower in a case that we get TMX and KXL. And so they're saying, well, maybe now's the time to firm up these flows.
But look, I mean, a pipeline company's dream is to have 100% full utilization for as many years as you can possibly get, right? Then you have a recurring, stable stream of cash flow for beyond what your shareholders can see. And that's just the dream. So, you know, now in this age of abundance where we have too much production, they have the opportunity to fully utilize this thing. They're just saying, okay, I'm going to lock it in. And so say, fine. I mean, that's just behaving as one would expect in a free market capitalist context. So it's hard to fault them for what they're doing. And I think that, you know, it's more a case of a higher context of what this does to the structure of the industry.
Right. I mean, I think this is why we have regulators in this country, right? Is that companies will do whatever, you know, maximizes their profits, so I can understand their motivation and their desire to firm up their revenues. But at the same time, sometimes there's negative implications of this to a broader group. And so that's why the regulator, it's such an important role to have a regulator in this country that can weigh in on these big changes and say, okay, well, what can we do? You know, maybe there is a compromise here where we could firm up some of their revenues and get rid of some of that uncertainty, but at the same time, make sure that there aren't negative consequences and maybe some unintended consequences for the rest of the industry.
So what do you think? I mean, are we going to see it remain as completely pipe neutral? In other words, 100% spot or 90% contracted as Enbridge wants it, or somewhere in between?
I mean, that, who knows, that'll be a huge debate at the hearing whenever it does happen, because I do believe with the verification nomination procedures that we do have, which the NEB has written themselves, has problems. They divvy up the space unfairly, and they have the you know, the ability to decrease prices over what they would have been otherwise. If you fix those, I think the answer to that question is different. The way it is today, it's problematic to make a big change like this when the rules for divvying up the space don't really work that well.
Right. What is the timeline on this thing anyway?
Well, you know, it's fast here. Like, the comment periods are happening over the next week or so. You're going to hear from additional voices in terms of their views. I mean, the big question being asked is, should we evaluate this deal before people are forced into signing binding contracts? Or should we do the typical process where you do the binding contracts and then the regulator evaluates it?
Right.
The industry, so far half of them, have voiced their opinion that this deal is flawed, needs to be looked at by the regulator because they don't think it's going to pass the test.
Okay, but let me, okay, just sort of play the devil's advocate here again, because I do think that we need to understand the arguments of, say, an Enbridge or a refiner or somebody else to say, well, what are you complaining about? If you're a small oil producer, you can enter into a 10-year contract too.
You know, the smallest producers are really challenged, but, you know, all producers are challenged based on the comments, but the smallest producers are challenged because you need to have a minimum production level in order to sign up for this. Also, do you want to put all your oil into one market? This is actually a fairly illiquid market with limited options. That's actually one of the other problems. We'll get into some of the problems with it.
There's only five, six refineries.
Yeah, right? There's a handful of refiners. You're a very small producer. Are you going to get a fair price in a world where we are oversupplied? We have more supply than we have pipe capacity. So, you know, there's a lot of barriers for the small companies. I know Enbridge has changed their proposal to try to make it accommodate smaller producers, but I don't think it really works for many. The other big problem is many really small producers are going to rely on that spot capacity, which has been totally shrunk. Like, we're going from having, you know, 2.7 million barrels a day of spot capacity today to like 300,000 barrels a day. And I didn't get into this issue, but the report done by the National Energy Board in March talked about the fact that, you know, certain types of shippers get more access to that capacity than others. And it's really the upstream only producers that get the least of that share of spot capacity. And there's a real concern that if you make this massive change, you shrink down the spot capacity, you keep those same rules about divvying up the space, that the small guys are going to get almost none of that space.
Yeah, so it's
they'll be blocked out of the pipeline.
I mean, we've seen this movie before, so to speak. Let's just take bookstores. Like, the corner bookstore gets put out of business by the Chapters Indigo. Big box bookstores get, then of course Amazon comes in with its online selling of books and so on, and it becomes a much more of a big company game. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that the smaller independents are really challenged. The question is, to what extent do we seek to protect the independent, entrepreneurial, small company, some not so small, here in Western Canada, and allow big boxification to take over?
Well, and I think I would just add, I think there's a perception that it's only the small guys that are disadvantaged. Actually, you're hearing from the producers that even the largest feel disadvantaged by this offering, and the potential for this pipeline to be owned by the buyers who know that the producers have few options is a big problem. So there's a market power issue from the fact of Enbridge proposing this at a time with limited options, but there's also a market power issue associated with giving the Midwest refiners who, let's face it, it's in their best interest to have Canadian crude prices as low as possible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so if they have owned the pipeline and they have the ability to have more negotiation leverage, more power than they do today, that generally is not going to be good for price.
Yeah, I mean, this era that we are in, where we have overcapacity here in Western Canada, in part because we've gotten very good at bringing oil and gas out of the ground at progressively lower cost, combined with pipeline constraints, creates a situation that is very conducive to market power being able to move in and change the rules of the game.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, so, you know, back to this process, I got a little off track.
Okay, yeah, so where are we at? Tell us what's coming next. Tell us what's coming next.
Yeah, so basically, these subset of Canadian producers, representing half of all production, have brought this concern to our regulator. The regulator is asking for all other parties to give their opinion. And the question being asked is, should the hearing happen now. And then the open season.
But a hearing to say what? Hearing to talk
to
about
To view
what?
The terms. To view all of the terms that have been proposed.
Should we convert the pipeline into 90% contracted versus pipe neutrality? Open
exactly what we have today.
Yeah.
If we should we even consider any to be firm? Mm-hmm. If we consider some to be firm, what should be the terms, the tolls, the conditions of that agreement? So like, let's analyze
well,
the entire
sense.
Offering.
Let's just talk about it.
And yeah, you know, I would look at this and say, if that many Western Canadian producers, and I expect actually to see more mm-hmm. in this comment period, are concerned by this, then we should put the brakes on this thing, understand what are the implications. And I think there are some far-reaching implications for Western Canada, for governments. Let's understand all of that before we go any further with this. And so that's what's being asked. And so everyone's going to weigh in on that. Then a couple days later, Enbridge is going to put their arguments of, I'm supposing, on why mm-hmm. they want to go forward with the other process, which is open season first, mm-hmm. then hearing. And then finally, the producers that initially had their concerns raised to the NEB are going to be able to put kind of their final word in terms of their view on should we have the hearing before or
okay,
after.
But one more thing. I mean, the CER, Canada Energy Regulator, is effectively an arm of government. And the, I'll call them the big box players, the big pipeline companies, refiners, producers, would say, leave it to the free market to sort it out. What do you say to that?
I mean, I think there's a reason that back in 1949, that the Canadian Parliament had the foresight to say that infrastructure like this that benefits all Canadians needs to be regulated and needs to be open so that a lot of companies can benefit from it. You know, at the time, they modeled the Pipeline Act on the Railway Act, and that was a large piece of infrastructure that they wanted all companies to have access to. And that Right. was the principle applied to this. So under the NEB Act, which has now been renamed, it's the
Canada Energy Regulator.
Well, no, actually, that's confusing. That is the Canadian Energy Act.
Oh, the Canadian Energy Act, okay.
But it's been renamed, but it's the same thing. It actually talks about the fact there is a requirement for open access for all.
Okay, and so it's really...
So they need to regulate to make sure that companies don't break that principle.
So I'm just going to call it again. It's a debate about pipe neutrality or not.
Yeah, is this offering limiting some mm-hmm. shippers, discriminating against right. some shippers for not having the same access? So I hope there is a hearing. I do think that the offering needs to be adjusted. You know, I'd like to see the regulator, like many other producers here that have voiced their opinions, weigh in on what is an offering that makes sense, especially in this environment that we live today with so much uncertainty on future pipe capacity, not only other systems like the TMX and Keystone, but also within the Enbridge mainline itself. We're not sure when Line 3 is going to be completed, you know, that replacement project. It's been delayed. There's uncertainty about this Line 5. We talked about that in a previous podcast. You know, if Line 5 actually gets shut down, people that sign up for this capacity are not going to do very well by it because now there's like too much capacity going into a market that has a lot less demand.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many complications and issues and so on. But I think we just have to take the complexity and distill it down to one of principle. And that is when you have a major artery with 70% of capacity, export capacity, and you alter the rules, you're going to alter the market forces.
Yeah.
And I think that violates this overarching, longstanding, multi-decade principle of pipe neutrality, we got to talk about it. And I think that's all that the producers who have collectively signed letters and intervened and or whatever it is that they've been doing with the Canada Energy Regulator need to be heard. And we need to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, everyone should be watching this. If you care about Western Canadian and Canada and this industry, this is the potential to be a market-changing event.
Well, until next time.
Yeah, thanks for joining our podcast. And back from the summer, we're happy to be here. If you like this podcast, please rate us on the app that you listen to and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.